This is the Skirted Roundtable. I'm Linda Merrill from Surroundings.
And this is Megan Arquette from Beach Bungalow 8.
And this is Joni from Code to Texas.
And this week on the Skirted Roundtable, we are welcoming fellow blogger and television personality, Meg Fairfax Fielding of the blog Pigtown Design. So Meg, thank you so much for joining us at the Skirted Roundtable.
Well, I'm honored to be here. Thanks for having me. This is so exciting.
Yeah, we're excited to have you. And yes, you're a television personality because you have just made two appearances on the Nate Burka show. So we're going to want to hear all about that. But
okay.
First, we want to hear sort of about the beginnings of Pigtown Design and how you got into design blogging and your name and everything else.
Okay. I started blogging in January of 2007. It was right after I moved back to the United States after living in Wales. And I moved home very suddenly with no house, no car, no job, no nothing. And I just needed something to really distract me from everything that was going on. So I had just discovered blogs and started blogging. And for the first couple months, it was just my mother reading it. And then gradually it picked up and, you know, I've got a pretty decent readership now. And the name comes from the little neighborhood in Baltimore where I live. It's called Pigtown. And that was because the pigs used to run down the main street from the train depot on one end to the slaughterhouses on the other end, and allegedly people used to grab the pigs as they ran by, but I don't really believe that. And they tried to gentrify the name and call it Washington Village, but it just sounds so generic. So most of us still call it Pigtown, and I think that, you know, it's definitely a name that you're not going to forget, and anybody who knows Pigtown knows it's kind of an oxymoron, Pigtown Design.
I know. I think the name was such an eye-catcher. It's such a great blog name, you know? And people never realize that it's actually the name of your neighborhood, you know? It's funny.
My sister-in-law, which Meg and I have talked about, lives very close to Meg, and she actually, I thought it was some sort of a towny nickname for Baltimore, and she corrected me and said, no, that's the neighborhood that we live in. And but the great thing, Meg, that I love is how you constantly change your
header.
Banner.
Yeah.
Header. Yeah.
Yeah, I need to get on that right now because the one that's up has been up for about a month or so. And then the one that was before that I had gotten from Vicky Archer. She sent it to me from a little Brocante market in France, and she'd seen this pig, so I put that up. So I actually got a new pig the other day, so I think I might try to photograph him and see if I can do something fun with that.
Do you collect pigs?
I didn't until I moved here. And I do sort of, it's a default thing. If nobody can figure out what to give me, they give me a pig. And so I've actually gotten quite a collection of them, which is pretty funny. I even have a hat that has like sort of like a pig face on it and wings, then you can pull this tab and the wings go up and down, but I don't wear that very often because it's just so stupid looking and the dog hates it, so I have to be concerned with his feelings.
Connor has sartorial oversight.
Yeah, just on the pig clothes though.
Before you started the blog, your interest in decorative stuff, how did that start?
I had actually wanted to be an architect until I realized how much math and how much imagination you needed. But I'd always, you know, been interested in buildings and the built environment and looking at buildings and the detail on buildings. And my father, who moved to Baltimore from England in his 20s, used to sort of force march us around the city and, you know, show us buildings and why they were interesting and why they were special. And he was a PR director at an art gallery in Baltimore. So we spent a lot of time there when we were children. And so I really got to understand art and, you know, buildings and architecture very early on. But I just, you know, I didn't have the chops to do it. So I studied art history because that's what I liked, and economics so people wouldn't think I was stupid. So.
And which do you prefer, art history?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, economics is just, it's hard.
And you work, you work for a nonprofit, correct?
I do. I'm the director of development for the Woodbourne Trust, and it's the fifth oldest charity in the United States. We were founded in 1798, and we were an orphanage originally for children sort of abandoned after the American Revolution, and we were an orphanage for a long time, and at one point we were the Orpheline Charity Asylum, and then we were the Home of the Friendless, and I just thought, oh, those poor children.
I know.
And
what a name. The Home of the Friendless. It's so sad.
So I've been there for 3 years now, and I actually worked there about 10 years ago. And when I came back from England, my boss heard I was back in town, and so he hired me. And I love it. I mean, just, you know, Joni knows, because she was so kind to put our video up last year, that, you know, the work we do is so hard, but it's just so necessary, and it's so rewarding. So my big project this week is getting this major grant in tomorrow afternoon, so I that's what I'm doing after I leave you guys. It's working on the grant again. But it's great to do.
Mm-hmm. Did y'all ever finish painting the lobby?
We did, actually, and I'm just getting ready to do the final part of that. We have picked some pictures out, and we're having them framed, and we're getting a black credenza in there. And actually, just this week, they had the floor polished, and it just looks spectacular. It was, it just was so beautiful. It had it polished and waxed, and it just looks fabulous. It's just gorgeous. And it's just such
I think you should tell people, the interesting thing is it's the original, or I don't know, the very original, but it's like an an old orphanage house that your office is in.
Yeah, it was built in the 1850s, and it was a private home until the 20s, and then it turned into an orphanage. But so much of the original detailing, all the plaster work, all the marble fireplaces, and this huge black and white checkered marble floor is all still intact from, you know, that long ago, and after having, you know, generations of children living in this building. So it's just, the house is solid as a rock. I could slide down the banister and it wouldn't move a millimeter. So it's just, it's a great house to work in. And I have a new office that has two windows, south-facing windows, and they are 5 feet wide and 8 feet tall. So I have to get up on the windowsill to raise and lower them. And but it's great. It's
but
just,
do you
it's
still
nice
have the
sunny.
Do you still have the fireplace?
No, I swapped out that office, unfortunately.
Oh.
So, but I got windows that open, so that was a really good trade. So I have windows that open against a fireplace that didn't work. So I was really happy with the swap.
People come back? Do people who used to live there come back ever and look
they
around?
They do. Yeah, they do. We actually had one woman come back, and she told us that the first time she'd ever had new clothes with the tag still on them was when she was at our place. And we had gotten her first new clothes ever, and it was just really stunning to hear that story, that she'd never had any new clothes, and we gave them to her. And
has anyone come back that's been successful through life?
Oh, yeah. Uh-huh, yeah. Actually, a lot of people. We have somebody who's actually an antiques dealer here in town who was there in the 50s, and his parents just couldn't cope with another child, so they, you know, gave him to the orphanage. And so he's actually a donor, and he comes back, and he's talked to us about being there. So, you know, I think a lot of people are. I think this generation is probably going to be less so, just because of the change in demographics and dynamics with drugs and things like that. If you've ever seen The Wire, you know those are the kind of kids that we're dealing with.
Mm.
So it's tough. So mm-hmm. We just, you know, we hope to sort of rescue one child at a time. So it's a tough job. Sorry.
And was that building? No, I think that, you know, sometimes we all need to hear that sort of thing.
Right.
I mean, it is a bummer, and that's why we need to hear it. And that's why not a lot of people do what you do, I think. So even more kudos to you.
Well, I do want to touch on this that Meg mentioned, the video. And what they did is they videoed the children that live there now, and they're mostly like teenagers.
Mm-hmm.
And they each said what they would like, you know, for Christmas, or and what they wanted, y'all, pencils, drawing pencils, and, you know, like a notebook with paper, mm-hmm. to, you know. I mean, like simple, you know, they wanted an MP3 player, you know, not an Apple iPod, you know, but just an MP3. I mean, just things that are, that basic thing. It was so sad.
This summer, because it was so hot here, they couldn't be outside doing sports and games. So the kids decided to open a library. And so I put out this call for books, and we have gotten 2,000 or 3,000 books. And a lot of people who gave initially through you putting it out on your blog, Joni, are still giving to me now. And I have somebody up on Long Island who sends me, you know, a case of books every 2 weeks. And she said, you know, I just go around to the thrift shops in my neighborhood and pick up books. And then she sent me a carton of stuff from Staples for pencils and pens. I mean, it's just, it's really been such a gratifying thing combining, you know, the blogging and my work and just having it be so successful.
It's just, how many kids do you have?
We have about 50 boys and about 10 girls. We have one very small unit for girls, and they're all between 12 and 18.
So are these kids who were, like, runaways, or?
Some are runaways. Some are, I mean, they've all been remanded there by an agency like a health and mental hygiene or juvenile services or something like that. You know, they have, most of them have behavioral and mental health issues. So,
do they have a school?
We have a full-time school there.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
It's a residential program with a full-time school, and they actually go to school 12 months a year.
Which is supposed to be the right, like, I mean, you know, they're saying now it's ridiculous to take kids out.
Oh, yeah, because we don't have farm kids anymore.
Right, and now they're saying it's the reason that it continues is because it generates so much income for travel and, you know, all these other. So
they take two-week breaks every 3 months. They have 2 weeks off, and it works out really well. And it just, you know, the continuity of learning is really, really important.
So, Meg, besides doing that, you obviously have, and, you know, your design background and all that thing, when did you start your selling your pillows? Was the first thing that I noticed that you were selling, making yourself and then selling them, right? Were you?
Yeah, I started that January when I just happened to be stuck at a train crossing, and I'm just really impatient, and, you know, the idea of sitting waiting for a train for 10 minutes just kills me. So I saw somebody go into this building that I'd always seen, and I thought, oh, that's really actually a store. So I looked at a U-turn and I pulled into the driveway and I walked in and I started looking at these fabrics, and I'm like, oh my God, there's like Scalmondre and Schumacher and Ralph Lauren. And
there's Kelly Wills. There was the Quid, you know, Kelly Whistler's fabric.
Yeah.
I remember that.
That was the Imperial Trellis, and I was just freaking out, so I had to walk back outside, and so I called my decorator friend, and I said, you know, where are you? And he said, I'm like 10 minutes from your house, and he said, meet me there, oh my God, you gotta meet me there. So he met me there. I went back home, he met me there, and we went back over, and they ended up having to throw us out that afternoon because the two of us were just screaming. And I wrote about it a couple days later, and I wrote about it on a Friday, and that Saturday morning they had a line of people outside waiting for them to open because of the blog post I had done. So I just, you know, I love these fabrics, but I didn't know what to do with them. So when I knew that we were going to have that 5 days of snow, that 50-some inches, I went and bought a sewing machine and taught myself to sew. And,
oh, no way. You taught yourself just then?
Yeah, I'd never sewed before, so I taught myself, and I made this, like, really stupid-looking pig thing for Connor, which he will have absolutely nothing to do with. He just, like, hates it. And it's sort of a pig armadillo thing. And then I just started chopping up all these pieces of the fabric that I had and made a comforter, like a patchwork quilt. And that was, like, my second thing. And then I just sort of figured out how to make pillows and do all that and start selling them.
So I had no idea that quilt, because I remember that post, and I just thought you were someone who was a little sewing bee.
No, I just learned, you know, 5 days of confinement, you just learn all sorts of things. You know, I can only talk to the dog so much.
And then you started doing the pillows, put up an Etsy shop.
Actually, I'd had the Etsy shop before, and I'd sort of been selling antique-y kind of stuff. and, you know, just smalls and collectibles and stuff. I mean, not collectibles, not like Beanie Babies. but, you know, little silver pieces and things like that I'd find here and there. And then I just sort of put one of the pillows on as a trial balloon, and it sold right away. So I was like, oh, I can do this. And then I taught myself how to do piping and things like that. So, yeah, I'm really, really practical. It pains me to say that, but I am.
Do you do zippers in them? I mean, do you do pillows? Yeah. Can you take the cushion, insert out?
Yeah, I do it like a big envelope, closing the back. So I can do zippers. I like the look without them. So I just did the other way. Yeah.
Okay, so then you were talking about all the collectibles. Where do you do auctions? Where do you find your estate sales, Goodwill?
Everywhere. I'm really lucky that there's this Goodwill right by my office that sells everything by the pound, amazingly. It's $1.67 a pound, regardless of what you buy.
Wow.
And it's a 2-minute drive from my office, and if I was lazy, I would walk, but I'm not. You know, if I wasn't lazy, I'd walk. But I drive over there, you know, sometimes at lunch or on my way, and I'll just pop in and see what they have. And I've just gotten incredible things there. I got that document file that has 30 drawers that I'm now using for my shoes, which is, it's just a great little piece. And I've got some really nice, really amazing things there. And then, you know, there's this Rossi Episcopal Church that has a thrift shop that nobody knows about because they're open at the most random times. And that's where I found the two Hermes scarves for $2 each.
Unbelievable.
Yeah. So, and then I just poke around. I mean, I call it poking around. You know, people go, what are you going to do today? I'm just going to poke around. And, you know, I go in some really, really, really bad neighborhoods and find some really, really good things. And I go in some good neighborhoods and find okay things. And it's just, constantly do this. So, and I love it. I discovered earlier this year that I'm a hunter, not a collector. And like, I would
you like the thrill of the hunt.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. I would find these things and I'm like, God, what am I going to do with this? And I was at this dinner party and, everybody had to answer the same question. And it was like, what do you want to be when you grow up? If you could be anything you wanted. And I set it up, and they're like, why? And I said, because I love going out and finding really cool things and then, you know, letting somebody else have them. And they're like, well, you're a hunter. You're not a collector. And I was like, oh. And it was just this huge eye-opening moment for me. It was really funny. I was like, oh, well, now I understand. So, and I'm a process person, not a product person. I love the process of doing something.
You're a picker.
I don't really like to say that, Joni. I think it's got negative connotations to me.
Well, no, that's what they're called.
I know. Yeah, but I think it's sort of different than a picker because I sell it directly to somebody else. And I've done this for a while. I started an architectural salvage place about 10 years ago with a high school friend. And we did mostly deconstruction of buildings. We'd have these big things. And people would come in and they're like, yeah, well, I don't want to buy a mantelpiece or I don't want to buy a stained glass. I want to buy something. So I just started, you know, finding these sort of smaller things and selling those. And, you know, because people wanted something to take away, you know, from this cool place that we had. So that was sort of when I got into it. And I did really well with it. And then when I was in the UK, I bought and sold as well and did a lot of it on eBay and online. So I've been doing it for about 10 years now.
Do you think it's worth it? I mean, you said you did really well. Is it really lucrative? The time, you know, Joni mentioned pickers, that show Pickers. Yeah. Whenever I watch
it. Which I saw for the first time the other night.
Yeah. Did you like it?
I thought it was interesting. Yeah. But I think it's just, I mean, they pick big stuff, you know, it seemed, or the one show I saw.
Yeah.
It was bigger stuff.
But they don't make any money. I mean, they you know, it's a big deal. They made $150. That doesn't even, the time. I mean, so that's what I mean. Is it really lucrative? Do you really make, I mean, the hours you spend, does that even matter?
I have this rule of three that I did when I was a caterer for a while. And it was, you know, the first third is my cost of things. The second third is like the prep work that I have to do. And then the third is the profit. So anything I sell is a minimum of 3-time markup for me. So, I mean, you know, I couldn't make a living on it right now because I'm not doing the volume that I need to do. You know, I don't know whether I could. So, it doesn't pay insurance.
Right. So, like the Hermes scarves that you bought for $2, you wouldn't sell those for $6.
Oh, no. No, I kept them. No, I mean, one of the things, you know, I'll sell it at the value that I think I can get for it, but I would never sell it for less.
Less than the three.
Yeah. You know, like if I buy a little set of forks for $5, you know, I'll sell them for 15. Because and it's also what I'll pay, what I got to pay for it if I was in an antique store or something like that. So, you know, I'm really low on my inventory on my Etsy shop right now, but I just haven't had time to do it because I have a lot of stuff. So, and people seem to like what I buy. They like the style of it. And, you know, it's basically I hunt for treasure so you don't have to.
But that's, and you enjoy that part of it, which
yeah.
Not everyone does.
No.
I love it. I'm with you.
Yeah, I do too. So and I go to auctions sometimes. I have a friend who works at Sloan's and Kenyon in D.C., and she gives me a heads up on the good ones. Like, she emailed me the other day, and she's like, do you wear size 8.5 shoes? I was like, no, why? And she goes, oh, you don't even want to know how many pairs of 8.5 Ferragamos I have over here. And
oh, God.
It's like, I could just, like, you know, I wear 7.5, but, yeah, that might be worth trekking down to D.C. for over the weekend.
So tell us about your appearance on the Nate Burka Show and how that came about.
Earlier this summer, the local paper had done an article about me. They just had launched this new home section, and they were, you know, doing a lot of articles. So they did this article on yard sailing, and they called me and asked me if I wanted to be the person who went yard sailing. And, of course, it was 102 degrees that day. It was just miserable. I mean, absolutely miserable. And so I had a photographer and a reporter with me. And, you know, it was just really not the best way to be inconspicuous. And we went to about 6 or 7 yard sales, and, you know, they asked me to point out things that I thought were nice and that I could do something with, and so we did that. Anyway, the article, and it ended up being syndicated to all the Tribune papers, and it was picked up by the Philadelphia Inquirer, and one of the producers on Nate's show saw it and called me a couple days after it was in the paper up there, and asked, you know, just sort of interviewed me online and, you know, just asked me a bunch of questions about what I did and, you know, my blog and things like that. And then the funniest part, she said, oh, can you send me a headshot? And I'm like, really? I live in Baltimore. We don't do headshots. So I had to go over to my sister's, who's a photographer, and get her to do a headshot for me. So I didn't hear anything back from them for 3 or 4 weeks. And all of a sudden, about 2.5 or 3 weeks ago, I got a call from another producer and said, you know, oh, you know, we love that article. And, you know, it sort of finally percolated up to Nate, and he really, you know, was interested. And so we come up, and this was maybe Wednesday, and they wanted me to come up to be on the show the following Tuesday. And in the course of the conversation, I just happened to mention that I was having a flea market, this sort of upsale tag sale, at my friend who has the other architectural antiques place. And so they said, oh, that's so cool. We want to come down and shoot that too.
Oh my God.
So then I got a call on Thursday afternoon saying, oh, you know, here's the shooting schedule. We're going to shoot for 4 hours at Houseworks and the tag sale. And then we're going to shoot for 4 hours at your house. I'm like, no, you're not.
Oh.
And they said, oh, yeah. Yeah, you know, we'd love to see all your stuff. I said, you don't understand. And I'm in the middle of buying a house. I said, I just tore the house apart to find all this stuff for the tag sale. It's just, it's such a mess. And they're like, well, we'll send you money for a housekeeper or for a maid. I'm like, the maid's not the problem. It's all the stuff. So anyway, so that Friday from 7 in the morning till midnight, like, I did everything for the tag sale and got the house ready. I showed up at Houseworks at 8 o'clock the next morning, and they showed up 15 minutes later. So they took pictures of me emptying the car and setting up for it and everything. So we shot there until 12, and then went and grabbed lunch and came over and shot at my house, which was just harrowing. It was harrowing. And then they're like, oh, and by the way, we're going to interview you too. I'm like, no, you're not. And they're like, we need to. I'm like, I have been standing outside in the 80-degree heat, and it's windy, and my hair is all skew-iff, and I didn't get my eyebrows done. And so they interviewed me anyway. So then giving me $100 to buy stuff at this tag sale. So I had walked around and bought all this stuff. And they're like, oh, we want you to bring that to New York with you. So we had two huge, like, IKEA, those big blue IKEA bags full of stuff, including glass globes, copper pots. And then they kept calling back and saying, oh, can you bring this? Nate thought that was a really cool picture. Oh, can you bring that? Nate thought that was cool. So by the time we left, we had two huge, huge bags of stuff and, you know, all of our gear. Unfortunately, my friend Tracy, who owns Houseworks, and I just, she asked if she could come up with me. I was like, yes, please. So we rented this honking big BMW and did a road trip to New York. So that was really fun. And so they came and got me, you know, got us at the hotel the next day and did hair and makeup and all that stuff. And they expanded the segment from 5 minutes to 13 minutes. So,
which is a lifetime on television.
It tells me it's an eternity. So it's a long time in television, apparently. So, and then the following week, they called me back and said, can you come up for a couple days? We wanted another segment with you. So I did. So the first segment aired this past Monday. Oddly enough, I was home sick, so I actually got to watch it. And I was watching it, and I'm just sort of like looking at this person thinking, who's that? Because I just didn't think I looked like that or sounded like that. I'm thinking, oh, isn't that funny? Her name's Meg, too. I'm like, duh. So it just, you know, and then Connor's looking at the TV just going like, what? What?
It's so surreal.
Yeah, it really was. It was very surreal.
I was watching it. You can actually see the spot on your blog. And, God, he is so gorgeous on TV. Is he that gorgeous in real life?
He is. It was funny because he totally went off script for almost the whole segment of it because he was so excited. And when we were backstage, he... you know, he usually apparently doesn't ever greet anybody. He just sort of wants to go right out there and, like, he's in the zone. And he stopped. He's like, Meg, oh, my God. He's like, I cannot wait to talk to you. He's like, I'm so excited. So that was really fun. And he was just charming and delightful. And, you know, my biggest thing was now I understand why all the Miss America people put Vaseline on their teeth because your mouth sticks to your teeth because you're so dry. It's like because you're so nervous. So,
Oh, you didn't look nervous at all. I watched it. I watched the clip that Joni was talking about, and you didn't seem nervous at all. I was like,
"Yeah,
wow,
I don't see that either." Yeah,
You seemed very command. You seemed in command. You seemed. I mean, you did great. You did well.
Well, thanks.
I'd be surprised. What if they started asking you? Wouldn't that be cool? Like
a segment.
Yeah.
The
funny thing was the executive producer came down afterwards, and apparently she never, ever does that, ever. And there was, like, all this foray in the hallway, and you know, you could just hear something was going on. And my producer for the segment was this guy named Greg Tufaro, who just happens to look just like Matthew McConaughey, so it was really kind of fun working with him. And, I mean, he was just a doll. He was such a nice guy. And, you know, there's all this scuffling. I'm like, what's going on? And he's like, oh, my God, the executive producer's coming down to talk to you. I'm like, oof. You're thinking, oh, God, was I that bad?
You're in trouble. You're in big
trouble.
Yeah,
and she came in, and she's like, you're great. We want you back. I'm like, really? And then she said, and I want to buy those big green balls for Nate as a present for him. And I was like, okay. So so we sold her those, and then she wanted, there was a... press glass to make these with this amazing silver filigree on it. And she said, the minute I saw that, I just fell in love with it. I really want it. Can I buy it? And I was like, no. And she's like, what? And I said, I'd like to give it to you as a gift. So I thought, you know, that'll make me look a little better.
Right.
So but that was God, cool. That's amazing. You know, that could be a whole new career for you, you know? Right. I mean, do you feel a pressure now to find, you know, more Hermes $2 scarves or...
You know, that's never going to happen again. That was
I know, but you know what I mean, a pressure to go out there and find wonderful,
you know. I mean, and I did with the money they gave me, you know, I parlayed that into about $1,000 worth of things. So, you know, I bought, you know, the two balls, the two Chinese or Japanese fishing floats that, you know, I've seen for $200 each. And then I found a copper stock pot that the identical pot is at Williams Sonoma right now for $400.
Wait, these things you purchased all for under in that $100 budget thing?
Yep. Mm-hmm.
That's incredible.
Yeah. So, and then there were four little like pickle forks, and the company that made them had gone out of business in 1898. And I bought four for $5 and saw one identical one online for $23. So, you know, it's $100 there. And then, you know, $100 for something else. So, you know, between the 400 and the 200 and the 200 and the 100 and this and that, it was, you know, I parlayed that 100 into about 1,000. So they were pretty happy with that. So,
That's so fun. It's like a big treasure hunt.
It is. I mean, that's what it is. It's a treasure hunt. That's, you know, it's treasure hunting. And I don't know, with an ability or just because I've done it so long that I can really just go through just a whole pile of stuff and go, okay, this is valuable, this is valuable, this is crap. I mean, I picked up two absolutely blackened silver serving spoon and sort of this fork-looking thing for 25 cents each, and cleaned them and polished them, and they're gorgeous, and they'd probably go for about $75. So it's just, you know, you have to put a little bit of effort into it, but it's fun. It is like every time I go out, it's like a treasure hunt every mm-hmm. time.
So do you ever go to flea markets, like, you know, someone who's already done the treasure hunt? Because you know, we go to, in LA, everyone goes to the Long Beach flea market or the Rose Bowl, which are really fun, but every time I'm there, I'm thinking, you know, I'm kind of paying somebody else to do all the hunting work.
I go to some. I feel like somebody's already found the treasure, and, you know, a lot of those people are selling at markets like that. I mean, they totally know what they have, and, mm-hmm. you know, I'm not going to get two nice silver pieces for 25 cents each. I'd rather go, you know, find it on my own.
Yeah, I hear you.
Yeah. And I mean, it's like eBay. I don't really buy anything on eBay because what's the fun in that? You know, you go and you click on what you're looking for and you buy it. You know,
well, eBay, look, I used to get jadeite, 11, 12 years ago when eBay started, and it was cheap. And now they know the value, you know, there's, mm-hmm. it's not really, you can't get, well, I'm sure you can get deals, but I never find any good deals like I used to on eBay.
Well, I get a lot of that French ivory handled silverware. Honey, yeah. And then my old housemate Andy buys it for me in the UK, and I get it on eBay UK, not on eBay US, because if you look at the American eBay, it's really expensive. If you go to eBay UK, it's cheap. Oh,
ooh,
don't publish
hint.
That.
Wait,
yeah.
Do you want me to not publish that, or?
No, I'm just kidding. I don't care.
You know, when you're really looking for something, it's great. I mean, it's not a good place to hunt, but if you need something, it's fabulous.
I had that brunch last year, I guess it was, and I suddenly decided I was going to use Blue Willow. And so I was able to get 20 Blue Willow dinner plates for pretty cheap, for around like maybe a dollar or two a plate on eBay.
Maybe you should just call me, Megan. I'll just shut your mind. Well, I mean, when I moved back here, you know, I had no job, no nothing, and I needed to furnish a house. And you know, probably 80% of what's in this house is, you know, thrift shop or flea market or Craigslist or yard sale, something like that, because I didn't want to go into debt furnishing a house. And so I just have like kind of funky things all over, and but it suits me fine.
Now, yeah. I've read that you also shop on Craigslist for some of your fun finds. And how do you do that? I've never seen anything, you know, more than grandma's old sofa on Craigslist.
Well, actually, funnily enough, I did get my sofa off from Craigslist. And the Joni knows the story. My house is 11 and a half feet wide. You know, every time Joni hears that, she just screams. And a woman was moving into a house that was smaller than mine, and she couldn't fit the sofa through the front door. And so the sofa was still on the moving truck, and I saw it on Craigslist, and I, like, zoomed over there and bought it, and they delivered it. So I literally got my, you know, Ethan Allen sofa right off the moving truck.
God.
And I never look at anything less than as a picture, because I think people don't know how to describe things and don't know what they're describing. So I just look at stuff with pictures. I just don't even bother if it doesn't have a picture.
Does it take forever, though, to find the diamond in the rough, because I'm with Linda. Every time I go on there, I just find so much crap and so much like shabby chic stuff and vintage. And it's not vintage. It's someone has taken paint and then scraped it off and they're calling it vintage. It's like gross.
Yeah, I mean, that's why I don't look at anything. Like you can sort by pictures. I only look at stuff with pictures and then 99% of it. I just say, you know, it's a good starting point. You know, sometimes I'll like email them and I said, well, you know, I really like this. Is there anything else that you're, you know, looking to get rid of? And, you know, sometimes I'll say, yeah, come on over and take a look. And it's like, score. I got a bunch of old quilts that way. And the woman's like, yeah, I don't know if these old quilts. I'm like, I'll take them.
What'd you do with them? Did you make them into something else?
No, I still actually have them. I'm getting ready to sell them. Because they're just taking up space now. So I'm actually getting ready to put them on my Etsy shop.
What would you say was your sort of best find?
Well, other than the Hermes scarves, I found this, when I was doing the article for The Sun, I found this really pretty little peacock pin. And it turned out that the jeweler who made it worked for Cartier. That's where he did his training.
Talked about that $2 in the Nate Berkus clip, right?
Yeah, on the show. Yeah. I mean, one of my favorite things is my desk that I use, which is a 6-foot long stainless steel kitchen counter, and it's got a shelf on it, and a lot of times Connor sleeps on the shelf, and it's about 30 inches deep, but it's 6 feet long, and it's a great desk. And you know, I think it's all about repurposing stuff, like the document file that's, you know, holds all my shoes now.
Yeah, that's cool.
That was $20. I pulled up in front of the Goodwill, and it was out in front of the Goodwill, and there's one of the workers out there. I'm like, can you put that in my car, please? So he jumped in the back of my station wagon, and I went in, and they said, how much was that metal cabinet out there? And they're like, oh, $20. I'm like, here you go. So it was like, you know, you got to act fast. Mm-hmm. But you just got to keep your eye out, and you have to have a tolerance for it. I mean, a lot of people can't.
My big score in Houston was, there's this place on Westheimer, and there was this woman, and she used to get gate leg tables. They were old. They were probably from the 20s or the 30s. They were very, very heavy, and they were wood. They weren't veneered. And she sold them for like $200. And every client of mine for like 5 years, you know, got one or two of these gate leg tables. And then she's not in business. She just left, and it kills me, you know, because I could use them right now for a client.
Yeah, actually, I got one at a church. Yard church jumble sale, and it was this hideous color brown, and I took it home and I sanded it and painted it, and it's the best table because it's only 12 inches wide when both pieces are down, so it's great.
Yeah, that's funny you said that, because I always had her restain them before I picked them up. She would charge me like $50, and I'd always have her stain them, you know, dark brown.
Like, I picked up these two chairs that were sort of Chinese Chippendale looking chairs, and they were this hideous flat brown with brown and green seats on them, and so, but they were nice looking, so I bought them and took them home and completely redid them and put hot pink and white Waverly fabric on them, and you know, so it's fun. I like doing stuff like that.
Now, you and I launched our digital magazines like the same minute, practically. It was so funny. So tell us about your magazine, Pigtown Design.
You know, my work and my blog overlap a lot, and this year we'd really decided that we didn't want to print another annual report. We wanted to do a sort of virtual annual report for work. So I'd been seeing this technology like with Lonnie and Rue and all that. And so, you know, I did one and I showed it to my boss. He's like, that's such a cool idea. I love that. And it's going to save us a ton of money. And we'll just send out a postcard saying, you know, go here and look at the annual report. Because I think people look at annual reports for like 30 seconds and then chuck them.
Right.
So anyway, yeah, I'm just starting to think about my fall edition right now. But I just haven't had that much time in the last 2 weeks. But yeah, I love yours. I think it's great looking. Linda, I think you've done a beautiful job, and you've done two of them, and I've only done one, so I'm feeling a slacker.
Oh, yeah, you're a slacker. How often are you going to publish it?
Probably quarterly. I think that's sort of what I can deal with right now.
Yeah.
Probably about the same number of pages, about 20 pages. So I was just thinking about what to write about. That's my every night dilemma, what I write about today.
Yeah.
So I know you guys probably struggle with that, too.
Yep.
No, I don't ever.
Meg, you and I and We all four of us, except for Linda, is about a year or two longer than us. But how are you struggling, or for topics, or how are you handling going into your fourth year of blogging?
Sometimes I struggle. I mean, you can tell when I struggle because it's like writing about Chilean miners. You know, just. You know, I usually felt like I read the UK papers, I read the New York Times, I read the Post. You know, I get it all online. So, you know, I have a really wide, you know, network of resources. And there are just so many things that catch my attention, you know, just like, oh, pretty shiny. Oh, I'll write about that. I went to a party earlier tonight about this new book called The American Dog, beautiful pictures. And I saw it on New York Social Diary the other day, and there was a big display of them when I was in New York last week. And so I went to that cocktail party and, you know, the launch of that book tonight. And so I'll write about that in the next couple of days. And, you know, I attended that all-day Billy Baldwin symposium, and they need to write about that. So yeah, it's not really a shortage. Just sometimes I just think, what am I going to write about now? But they also do it five or six times a week. So that makes it hard sometimes too.
Yeah.
You know, there's just times that it's just like, I just want to go to bed.
Right.
Yeah.
So, but it's fun. And, you know, my numbers are just steadily increasing, and that's always good. You know, I've definitely seen a jump in the last week. So,
yeah.
Even though they never mentioned my blog at all, which is funny.
Well, they Googled you probably.
Oh, yeah, they did. I mean, I found that they did. Like, Meg Fairfax Fielding on Google. It's like, you know, that was like a lot of the hits. So that was pretty funny.
Did y'all discuss the Blogging Day debacle at all?
I didn't talk to him about it. I talked to two of the producers about it. And luckily, neither of them was involved. But they know they made a big mistake. They
did?
You know, and they said, well, you know, they know they annoy a lot of people, and the second producer I work for has a Google alert with Nate's name on it. So she said, you know, right after that happened, it was just like bing, 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 bing all day long. And they both had seen that song that what's her name did, Jen, whatever her name is, did.
Mm-hmm.
But they said, you know, it wasn't a show about bloggers. They invited the bloggers to the show. And it was
but
not.
But why? I mean, what was the point?
Yeah, they didn't want to. Yeah, what was the point? They didn't want the PR.
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't a show about bloggers, but they had invited them to be in the audience. So I think there was, you know, some sort of miscommunication or something with them. But they certainly understand that was, you know, just a real debacle on their side, that they really, really missed an opportunity. And, you know, I think they're working to change that all.
Yeah.
So, you know, and they've only been on the air for a month. You know, and I think he's still finding his footing in a lot of ways too.
I was just more, I just kind of figure though, it's not him so much. I'm sure he ultimately, but I would think that there would be a savvy enough producer. I mean, there are several people who.
They have six teams. They shoot six shows a week, and they have six separate teams. Each team does a different show. So, you know, there's not really a lot of issue between the six teams. So, I think it was just somebody really dropped the ball on it. Somebody just, you know, didn't understand
their opportunity.
Yeah, absolutely not. And just what I've seen, you know, the 5 days I've been up there, these people do not stop. I mean, I would get calls at 10 o'clock on Sunday morning, at 6 o'clock Sunday night, at 11 o'clock Tuesday. I mean, these people work 24/7. And I think somebody just completely missed it. I mean, but I have to say, every single person that I worked on the show with, from Nate on down to the stage crew to the production crew, has been just so incredibly, incredibly nice. I mean, I have just not ever felt more warm and welcome anywhere. It's just, it's really amazing. And I think it just comes right from the top.
You were there 5 days?
We were there late Saturday, got there Monday afternoon, we're all there all day Tuesday, and then last week I was there all day Tuesday, all day Wednesday, and all day Thursday, doing location shots, and then Tuesday was location shots, Wednesday was meeting and rehearsal to go over the script, and then back on location, and then Thursday was final rehearsal, and then shooting in the afternoon, so I was there, 3 full days.
Wow.
So, I am extremely lucky to have a boss who lets me do this. I'm extremely lucky. So he's a saint. I love him.
That'd be hard to manage even if you ran your own business.
Yeah, it is. I mean, they called me Sunday morning and said, "Can you come up Tuesday?" And so I juggled my schedule a little bit, and I thought Tuesday afternoon, and then I got the reservation for the train, and it was 8 a.m. Tuesday morning. I'm like, "Oh my God!" So, but I made it work, and I took work with me and worked on this proposal the whole time I was up there, and just made it work. So, but there are not a lot of jobs that you could do that with,
right?
And since I don't have children, I just have my one fur child. My neighbor has a chocolate lab, and she sort of owes me a bunch of time dog sitting. So that worked out really well.
Well, Meg, I think we're coming to the end of our time, but
well, thanks.
This was it was just a lot of fun,
Well, thanks. It was. I've never Skyped before either. So. You're my first Skypee.
I think if we do nothing else on the Skirted Roundtable, we're introducing Skype to the design world. This has been the Skirted Roundtable with Megan Arquette from Beach Bungalow 8, Joni Webb from Code to Texas, and I'm Linda Merrill from Surroundings. And this week we were joined by Meg Fairfax Fielding from Pigtown Design. Thank you so much for joining us. You can visit us online at www.skirtedroundtable.blogspot.com. Or download our podcasts from iTunes, search for the Skirted Roundtable. Thank you so much, and we'll be back soon.